Welcome to our podcast, Conversations About Student Mental Health. I'm Chris Leonard, clinical social worker working with adolescents for over 25 years. In this podcast, I talk with school administrators, educators, clinicians, and parents to open a dialogue that will help the growing number of students struggling with mental illness. In our last episode, I spoke with three teachers, two from Texas and one from Chicago, about what they are seeing and experiencing in their classrooms. Alexandra talked about the impact of trauma on her students and how she has needed to devote so much time and energy to helping her students de-escalate and re-regulate. Allie emphasized how crucial it has been to embrace social-emotional learning and to ensure that her students are emotionally safe and available for learning. David noted the importance of treating his students as people with real concerns rather than as children with little concerns, as well as giving his students a sense of control over their environment. The experiences of these teachers underscore how the mental health needs of students have intensified during the pandemic. According to the CDC, emergency room visits for suspected suicide attempts among adolescents aged 12 to 17 began to increase beginning in May 2020. Between February 2021 and March 2021, emergency room visits for suspected suicide attempts among girls were 50.6% greater than they were during the same period in 2019. The increase among boys was 3.7%. These statistics are especially alarming in light of the pre-pandemic trends reported by the U.S. Surgeon General in December 2021. The Surgeon General cited studies which indicated that sadness and hopelessness had increased 40% for high school students between 2009 and 2019, and that suicide rates among young people aged 10 to 24 had increased 57% between 2007 and 2018. The challenge of effectively meeting the intensifying mental health needs of youth has been exacerbated by the significant increase in length of time young people spend in the emergency room waiting for risk assessments and acute follow-up care. A 2021 Yale University study of emergency room visits by youth 6 to 17, conducted between 2005 and 2015, found that length of stay increased by 24% for visits lasting more than 6 hours and 12.7% for visits lasting more than 12 hours. Notably, Hispanic youth were 3 times more likely to be in the emergency room for more than 12 hours. In addition to the delay in receiving care, time spent in the emergency room can be extremely stressful for young people, especially when the screening they receive indicates a need for immediate inpatient treatment. Too frequently, the young patient is waiting and waiting until a bed becomes available. My guest today is Shana Palmieri, a licensed clinical social worker from Honolulu, Hawaii. Shana is the co-founder and chief clinical officer of Transferral. Transferral is an innovative technology platform designed to create efficiency and improve patient care in the healthcare system by proactively matching patient needs to facility capabilities and quickly connecting healthcare professionals to providers with the resources to treat patients' conditions. Transferral is designed to disrupt inefficiencies within the healthcare system with a specific focus on addressing urgent access to care for behavioral health and medical patients. Shana entered the startup world after more than 17 years of experience in healthcare and social services, including direct clinical practice and healthcare administration. Her clinical and administrative experience includes working within various healthcare settings, including for-profit and nonprofit healthcare systems, local and state government programs, and nonprofit social service agencies. Before joining the team to launch Transferral, Shana served as the Director of Community Services at the Kalihi Palana Health Center in Honolulu, Hawaii. Prior to this position, she worked at the George Washington University Hospital as the Director of Behavioral Health Division, which she developed. Shana, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Fantastic having you. I'm sure our audience is eager to learn more about Transferral, so let's get started.
Great.
So tell us a little bit about what inspired you to start Transferral and the nature of the problem or problems that you're solving.
Sure. when I was in the District of Columbia working, the CEO of Trans for All and I, Nathan Reed, we were working together in an academic hospital there. And he was on the IT technology side, and I was the director of behavioral health services. And, you know, I really experienced firsthand what the impact was to the patients who were boarding in the emergency room for an acute psychiatric crisis. We saw young patients, children, adolescents, adults, and at times we could have 8 to 12 patients just boarding in the emergency room waiting. And it could be hours to days, especially if you got to a Friday night and there were no beds in the city and you're going to wait until Monday morning to place these patients. And so I really took a look at that problem with the health system there. And we were designing inside the health system what some different strategies would be, including hiring a 24/7 team of social workers. And we were really hiring a lot of staff that were highly skilled clinical staff to do an administrative function, which was to pick up the phone and call all of the hospitals repeatedly on the behavioral health side to see if they had a bed open, to send them fax paperwork, to call them back, did they get this? And the back and forth process went on and on to get these patients accepted without a lot of data and analytics to show if we were improving other than our own ED length of stay. So it was really watching what the outcomes were for those patients, because at the end of the day, we were there to be healthcare providers to improve the health and the condition of the patient. And I felt like many times because of the system inefficiency that you can't control within your own hospital, but it's the interaction of multiple health systems and how we connect those health systems together, we were creating situations for patients that were very distressing. And so I really wanted to find a solution to improve that situation and also find a way for hospitals to be more efficient, because there's limited resources and you don't want to be using highly trained clinical staff who could be working directly with patients to be on the phone doing manual based processes.
Yeah, and I can certainly see the need in my experience, in my work with schools and school professionals, and as a therapist myself, just the experience that people have going to the emergency room is so terrible sometimes that you can have somebody who's got kind of, you know, repeat risk, and now they've had that bad experience one time, and so now they're going to be withholding the next time, and they're not going to be as forthcoming about the level of risk that they have, which can be extremely dangerous. So I'm sure the people listening are eager to know, how do I get connected to Transferral? So how does a healthcare provider or school get started with Transferral? And what does the interface with the platform look like for that referring professional?
Right. So we go to various regions and we start launching. We're happy to take requests if there's interest in people wanting to launch a region that we haven't been in so far, but we're launching in multiple states currently, and we are live in a number of them. So essentially, that what the interface is for the clinician is Transferall is a mobile app. So we're in the App Store. We're compatible with Android and iOS. We're also a web-based platform. And so we provide this service to healthcare clinicians, to schools, to counselors, EMS. It could be mobile crisis teams, mental health professionals. And they will get accounts to Transferall. And then instead of having to call and find all of these resources, they just answer a few basic questions about their patient. And the system's going to geolocate to where they're at or where their patient lives and find all of the matching resources for what they're looking for. Wow. And then you can just send out requests electronically, and it will alert the receiving hospital or program. And it's not just inpatient facilities that we work with on the mental health side. It could be a partial hospital program, an intensive outpatient program. It could be outpatient services in their community that maybe the student needs to get linked with. We're starting to work with telehealth programs as well. So you could get a telepsychiatry or teletherapy appointment scheduled. And that's especially helpful when we're looking at students who live in rural areas, right? Where there's a small access to resources. And so they can just send those requests out. You can send clinical documentation without using fax. All of it is HIPAA compliant and secure. So it's all protected from a PHI perspective. And then there's messaging back and forth with real-time alerts. So you can send a request out and then you'll get like a push notification or a text notification that says, hey, you have a response. You can swipe, get back into the app, and you can communicate to get your student or youth accepted at the appropriate program. So it's a quick process.
That is extraordinary and boy, so needed. So now the next question people are asking is, what is this going to cost me? You know, so what's the cost to the school or provider?
A huge mission of our company is to increase access to care. So on the, for anybody who wants to use the platform to search and send transfer requests, there's no cost. We will sign up schools, EMS, police departments, CIT teams, healthcare agencies. They can use this platform at no cost to search and send transfer requests. And they'll have a log of all of the requests that they sent out, how long it took them to get the student or youth placed, where they ended up going. So they'll have a lot of those analytics as well to show that continuity of making sure that that student got into the appropriate place. It was great. I could tell you an example. We have a school district using this down in Houston, Texas. And I was just reviewing some of their cases that they sent this morning. And, you know, it's great if anybody who's been in this space and has tried to get care, then you know how long it takes, right? You have to make the phone call. Sometimes you're on hold to get in touch with the intake. Then you got to find out if they have a bed. If they don't, then you move to hospital B or program B and then down the line, right? You have to know what all the resources are too.
Right.
So on the platform, the school district sent a request out to multiple hospitals. And so it takes about maybe 30 seconds to answer a few basic questions. And then you click the hospitals you want to get the request. So they have a student in crisis. Within 15 seconds, all of the hospitals had responded about whether they had bed capacity or not and started to engage in a conversation about taking that student over. So there's a couple of things that happen here that are really impactful. One, they're avoiding the student ever going to the emergency department. So instead of the student who's in crisis, because they can't get the patient or they don't know what all the resources are. And so they say, well, okay, now we're going to call, you know, either the police or EMS. They're going to come. They're going to take the patient, drop them off the ER. Then the ER social worker or psychiatrist is going to come down and see them, right? Now you're looking at like 8 hours in the emergency department. Potentially that family is going to get a bill for that, right? Like some sort of emergency department bill as well. So there's that financial impact that can happen. And then if they can't find a bed or it takes a long time for that ER to find a bed, then they're waiting what could be days in the emergency room before they ever get to that placement. And so you look at that scenario compared to what the school district is doing now. That student was accepted and on their way to an inpatient behavioral health treatment program when they're in crisis in under 30 minutes from that request going out. So it's just a huge shift in time savings and cost savings for the family, and the student gets directly to the place that can provide them that treatment.
That's incredible. I'm kind of picturing one of those like maps, and it's got, you know, it like if you're tracking flights, like all the flights that leave from a particular place, and I'm picturing these multiple lines going out in all these different directions all at the same time. You're connecting
simultaneously with all these hospitals, which is absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just amazing. And the other, you know, I'm also thinking about the multiple kind of facilities that students can access, including telehealth. And I'm also thinking that this takes so much anxiety out of the hands of the school professionals who, you know, they no longer have to feel like they have to make a judgment in the moment. They're already making that connection with the medical providers immediately from the school. And you can, that idea of bypassing the ER is incredible and strikes me as so helpful.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one of the other really interesting things, because there's complexity, of course, in the way the mental health system works. And so there'll be regions where we really, as a team at Transfer, get to understand, well, how does this county work? How does this state work? How does the region work? So when we did the launch, you may be in a region where if your patient is under an involuntary status, you may have to link in the county mobile crisis team, right? And they may have to be involved to do some of this paperwork or to approve this transfer or to get involved. And through Transfer, you can actually link that team in with you. So if you were the school social worker, you could link in the county mobile crisis team and you guys could be working together with this patient through the mobile platform to place the patient as well. So we really take it kind of a step further to really understand, like, there's a lot of different dynamics that are involved here in terms of how crisis mental health works, and it changes sometimes by state, sometimes by county. And so we really pay attention to those things to make it so that that person who's trying to help that student, whether it is a physician in a rural hospital, critical access hospital, or it's somebody in a school, that they don't have to have the complexity of knowledge, but the system just helps them find the right workflow and move those patients to the appropriate place quickly.
I love that idea that you can collaborate with local, even with local professionals. So, you know, you even have that extra level of expertise that you're connecting to immediately. So if the healthcare providers aren't, how is this funded? I mean, who's paying for this service?
Sure. So on the receiving side, we set up networks when we go into different regions. And so if you can, it's a nationwide database. You could search by any zip code today and find the resources on TransForAll that clinically match to your patient. When we go into a region, we're going to link up all of the receiving inpatient facilities, and they're all going to be able to get a request. So if they're not on, if they're not participating and they haven't signed up with TransForAll on the receiving side, they're going to get a request that comes into their intake department, and they'll have a link to get that request and respond to it. If they are participating, we have a monthly subscription based participating cost on the receiving hospital side. And that's really a program that we offer to optimize intake performance for receiving hospitals, programs, you know, and they're able to track how long it takes to answer requests. They get data on how well their intake team that's accepting referrals is performing. And then we work with them. We have a client success team. We go into those hospitals, we meet with them, and we provide services on how they can best optimize their teams so that they're very efficient in receiving these requests. And we help them become more expedient in those requests in some ways. And that helps move patients through the system more quickly, right? So when we go into a market, of course, our goal is to work with as many hospitals or facilities on the receiving side as we can on that subscription model so that we can be actively working and having data and analytics on response times so that we can drive down how long it takes to have patients transfer. So for an example, when we went in to the Texas market where we're live, that was our first market that we went into. During the first year that we were live, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year on TransForAll, we reduced how long it took to get a patient accepted by 86%. So we are able to take those analytics and we're able to work with the teams and the response times and drive down how long it takes to get a patient accepted, which benefits the patients dramatically. And of course the health systems or anybody using the system, the faster they get a response and can get that patient into crisis care in those emergencies, the better the outcome is going to be for that patient.
And so I can imagine that the hospitals must love this because, you know, the patients clearly are benefiting because they're getting much quicker access to care, extraordinarily quick access to care. But the hospitals are also creating efficiencies for themselves in terms of their admissions process, their intake process, and, you know, just being able to maximize their capacity.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was had an inpatient unit previously, right? And so the way that we would get intakes was we just see faxes coming through the fax machine, right? And sometimes people would call, sometimes you just get a fax to the fax machine, right? And it's this process then where you have to organize all of this, right? So you imagine, like, I come in on Monday morning, I've got all these faxes from different hospitals. And I'm like, did we call all these people back? What's the status on these cases? And they would say, well, we were full over the weekend. So we didn't have any beds. So we didn't respond to these because we were full, right? Okay, well, now it's Monday morning. Then I'm like, do these 10 patients still need a bed? We got to call all the places back again and ask them, like, did you place the patient? Did you not place the patient? So with TransForAll, you would know, because if you got a request on a Friday night, you could say, hey, we're going to put this patient on a wait list because we don't have any beds right now. So then the referral source knows right away, and it's great customer service. And you could say, well, we think we're going to have a bed open on Monday, right? And if in the meantime, that person found placement for the patient, my intake team would get a notice and say, this patient has been placed. You don't need to worry about this one anymore. And you can move your resources on to working on the next patient that may need to be placed. Right? So you have all of this automation and you're not wasting your time working on trying to accept patients that no longer need to be accepted. You know, I hear all the time, hospitals will say, I just worked for 4 hours on this case. I called the referral source back and they said, oh, I forgot to let you know that that patient decided they didn't want to be placed and they left our ER like 4 hours ago. Ah. And so we're looking at taking out all of those inefficiencies within the system, because ultimately the end goal is that the patient benefits. And if we're all more efficient with our time on both the receiving intake side and then the sending side of the person who's trying to refer, we get a system where patients move more quickly. And, you know, we really saw just how important this was during the pandemic. I mean, this was a huge problem before the pandemic of emergency department patients. These psychiatric patients are boarding. I read an article this morning that was in Massachusetts. These kids are boarding for days. There was an article about a child who boarded it for 20 days between the emergency room. And then sometimes what the hospitals do is they admit the youth to a med-surg floor, which they don't need to be on, right? You're not getting any, you might see a psychiatrist as a consult, but it's not a treatment facility because they're waiting for a bed, right? And so the pandemic made this a lot more of a crisis, because not only were these behavioral health patients boarding there, but we had a lack of staffing resources. We've had a healthcare shortage in terms of staffing. We have emergency departments that are just full because they're surging with COVID patients, right? And then it's just so challenging and you just get backed up in terms of these patients needing to move into appropriate care. And you don't have the staff staff will sit on the phone for hours, just calling hospitals. Do you have a bed? Do you have a bed? Do you have a bed? And so it really became this critical crisis. And then what we also saw, as you mentioned, right, is that there's dramatic increases in the number of individuals going to the ED because they're in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did we have a crisis with the pandemic and rise of COVID, but we saw mental health issues skyrocket during COVID.
Yes.
And especially with the child youth and adolescent population.
Yeah. So efficiencies in time, efficiencies in communication, you know, not having these kind of false starts happen, that just helps everybody. Because sometimes, you know, if you have something, you know, for the patient, if you think something's going to happen and then there's a delay, you go, oh, forget about it. You know, I'm fine now. And you're out. And
that can really lose those patients to treatment, right?
Right.
And there can be some really negative outcomes, which are just devastating. If we don't have an efficient system to get patients to the exact place they need to be at the right time, we can lose our opportunity, our window of opportunity to provide trauma-informed crisis care to this patient population. And that's critical when we look at the, you know, suicide being the second leading cause of death for individuals aged 10 to 24,
right.
This is something that's really critical that we need to look at. And that there's the aspect of it of how do we provide qualified professionals who can provide the interventions when we look in school districts, how do we provide that level? And then how do we create a system that people can seamlessly transition through when they need to move to a different level of care because they're in crisis or they need support services, so that we can be proactive and not be in a situation where fatalities are occurring.
So I imagine that you know, the proactivity is fed and enhanced by a lot of the data you collect. You did give me some detail on that. Could you tell me a little bit more about the data you collect and how that helps?
Absolutely. So I look at the data as helping in two ways. One is in the moment today, right? So we're going to, everybody who uses the Transferal platform has a real-time dashboard, and they're able to see what their own intake department's response times are. They can see how well they're performing. We can see how well the market is performing. So I know how long it takes every one of our states to have an initial interest time and a median accept time, right? To get a patient. And we can drill that down into zip code. We can drill it down per facility. You could drill that down so far as user on the platform and how quickly you know, people can move patients. So we look at that in terms of operations on a day-to-day basis, and using that data, then we can continually drop those times and help improve the response times for patients being placed. So on our platform, across the board, if you send a request out on our platform, our median response time to get a response about whether a facility has a bed or not is less than 2 minutes. And our best performing facility comes in around 15 seconds. So very quickly, these facilities are saying, you know, we're taking a look at your case right now. We're looking at this and we are going to move on this. Or we're full right now. And we just want to let you know so that you have that information and you can move on to try and find, assistance for this individual somewhere else. And then the other thing I look at in terms of data that we're able to start to pull is what I would refer to as a long-term approach, right? So we can start to look at capacity issues in different regions. How far do children and adolescents have to travel to get inpatient crisis care? And I know in Texas that children travel 40% further than adults do when they're in crisis and need to get behavioral health crisis care. And we can break it down and start to detail that in different ways to say, you know, this particular region needs more adolescent beds because they most frequently send patients the longest distance, right? And so you can start to look at this data. And one of the things we hear legislators talk about all the time is, and people say all the time is, we don't have enough psychiatric beds, mm-hmm. right? Okay, well, that's true. But if we're really going to develop a detailed plan, what we need to know is, what type of psychiatric beds do we need specifically, and where do we need those beds geographically? Mm-hmm. Right? Because if we just go and add a bunch more adult patient beds, that might not be at all what we need. So we may say, like, great, we just added, you know, 150 more beds in the state, but that might not be the kind of psychiatric beds that we needed. And so when we can really start to filter down and say, okay, well, the patients who don't get placed are behavioral health patients who are also on dialysis, behavioral health patients who are COVID positive, right? Where are they going? Is there a unit who's going to take those patients? Are they aggressive, right? Maybe they're children and adolescents, maybe they're children with autism or developmental disabilities, right? So we can start to look at these different populations and say, these are the children who wait the longest or board the longest. Let's take a look at developing more of these types of services, because these are specific types of services that we need. And also, we don't have them in this community, and these children are traveling 300 miles if they need to get to a placement. So let's add beds there. So that's kind of the long-term strategy to look at when we're looking at capacity issues. And one of the nice things that we've been able to see is it's not taking a government response to improve some of those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the public market is taking a look, or the private market, right? It's taking a look at the data and they're starting to add the services themselves. So we saw a hospital down in Houston, and they said, we're going to add a wound care nurse. These patients need some wound care and they're boarding in the emergency room because there's no wound care here. And it just met the need without there having to be, you know, a ton of involvement. And so we're hoping and seeing those types of things happen as we move along.
So, yeah, so this is reminding me of the adage that in the age of big data, guessing is over, you know, there's no more need to guess. And I love the incentivizing private, you know, these private organizations that look at what the need is, and here's a place where I need to put in a new facility, or here's a place where we need to add a service. Right. That benefits everybody. So that's so beneficial on so many levels. So I think, you know, one of the things people worry about with apps and internet-based things is protecting data. So, and I know you said that the platform is HIPAA compliant, but people may be wondering how the student data is protected. So can you explain how that works?
Absolutely. So there's a myriad of healthcare technology-related security features that have to be in place. And we have to meet those for every health institution that we work with. So when you go into a hospital, part of our process is that we complete their full security and IT assessment for any technology they would use to show that we meet each one of these different elements that keeps patient health information private and secure within a technology platform. Mm. And so we do that. And we have a chief technical officer who manages making sure that we're in line with all of those regulations to make sure that we provide that through our technology. We also have each institution is going to manage their own user accounts, right? So And we'll set up things that help add that protection as well, like single sign-on can really help. But it's really about each institution is managing. If you're working here, you have access to your account. If you are not working here anymore, your account is deactivated. So it's only those people who are working for that organization, who are specifically working with that client, that are going to have access to that patient's information in the platform.
No, that makes sense.
To have a verified account with Transferall through your organization that has an agreement with us in order to be able to get into the platform and share that patient information.
Makes sense. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So what can schools do that, you know, a lot of school professionals are listening right now. What can schools do to help you maximize the effectiveness of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, I think for us with schools, what's been really impactful is providing them with the platform, which is no cost. It's available to them so that they can help their students access care. What we do when we go in and we work with an organization is we ask them, who are the primary who's the primary network of referral partners that you have that would really benefit in your region? And we'll work to set up the network specifically. And then we already have a primary network that we're going to set up with the inpatient behavioral health hospitals. And so we'll work with the schools and develop a plan with them. We just had a call with the school district down in Houston and all of the behavioral health hospitals. And we worked out a workflow to say, what's going to be most effective? So we brought those, that community of providers together using Transferall and said, let's figure out how to get these students the care they need as quickly as they can. So I think there's a couple of things with schools that I look at. Students are going to spend them all, you know, outside of their families, they spend the most time in school. Yeah. And so I think there's a number of opportunities that schools have. And one is making sure that they have the staff and the resources and the training to identify proactively when there is a challenge, right? And to provide those supportive services, that they really have that within the school because those students need those services. And then if they don't, for the resources they don't have in the school, developing those relationships so those students can quickly be referred and get into the services outside. And then I think it's the crisis is that the education around and having a plan within that school of what do we do when there is a crisis and how are we going to manage this? So if there's a suicidal crisis, if there's a threat to others, if there's a student who's becoming aggressive, how are we going to have a crisis plan in place and what are we going to do? And Transferall can help during that situation because we can directly get that student to the appropriate hospital or crisis service that they need. So I think those elements are really important for schools. You know, I mean, it was exciting to see too that this is recognized on a national level. So the supporting student mental health through the American Rescue's resources came out, right? So the federal government put $122 billion in relief funds towards the schools that they can use to address mental health, social, emotional, and academic needs of students as a result of realizing the mental health crisis coming out of the pandemic for students. Mm-hmm. And so I think with schools looking at what is our crisis process and how are we going to effectively help students get into crisis treatment if that happens in our school? And then also being very proactive with the services to help identify who are the students that could potentially be having challenges from a mental health perspective.
Donna, you spoke right to my heart there when you talked about proactive services, because so often our responses are reactive. And I agree with you 100%. We have to be ready for a crisis. I think too often people see a crisis as something extraordinary instead of something that you have to plan for and expect. Mm-hmm. And I think now more than ever, you have to plan for and expect that there will be crises. But the proactive provision of training for staff and parents and orientation for students of the recognition of mental health issues, it has so many benefits, and you really need to start there and, you know, have those crisis plans in place, but also really raise all the boats, get everybody oriented to what's going on and what mental health issues look like and how we can help.
Right.
And that kind of brings everything out into the air and the sunlight. And now there's not so much stigma and we can all just deal with what's really going on. So
absolutely.
spoke right.
I mean, we're planted in a crisis in the middle of the crisis, right? Yes. Like, and I always, you know, I mean, I've spent my whole career in crisis services for mental health, right? So I was like, it should never be a crisis for us. The crisis is for, it's for the patient, right? For the professionals or for the staff, right? We should be prepared to help provide the services and gently move this individual in a trauma-informed, kind way through the system so that they have a sense of stability and that we're helping them towards recovery, right? And so by putting the training in place in the beginning so that the schools can recognize signs and symptoms of a crisis, what's a crisis, what's not a crisis, how we can then intervene. And Transferall is a tool to help them access those resources. And then I think on the school's part, it's really having that plan in place to know we're at this point, right? Who are we going to call that's going to do the suicide assessment? Who's responsible for that crisis mental health assessment? What are our plans to get the student? And then Transferall is something that they can use to efficiently avoid, hopefully, an emergency department stay, avoid delays, and understand what those resources are to get that student or youth connected so that they can get the follow-up care that they need to provide that treatment outside of the school system.
Fantastic. You know, I was just thinking before, you know, in addition to what you were saying about, you know, why should schools get involved in this? I was just thinking, you know, that schools could contribute, you know, based on what you were saying earlier about data, that schools could contribute to the improvement of services, facility access, specialty units, things like that in their area just by joining the platform and starting to take part. Because that, now that data is being shared with providers and companies that provide these services. And now, oh, wow, they're going to see an opportunity that they want to provide this service or this facility in that area. So it's just so many benefits. So that kind of brings me to my last question. I obviously, we know that Transferall helps students get access to the best fit acute care super rapidly, super efficiently. We know that now the data you're collecting is helping in this process of development of new facilities and new services. What might be some other side benefits that you see?
Sure. I think, you know, in general, there can be these situations too that we look at that are the most severe cases that don't happen very often. But when I look at things like some of the worst fatalities, right, that have happened in schools. So we can look at some of these really serious situations with the school shootings that have happened, right? And there's a lot of complexities here to this. But I think that part of this goes into, you know, part of it when we're talking about putting plans and policies in place, right? What and making sure people are trained. But when we look at a lot of situations, one of the things that from a mental health perspective that I always looked at is our goal as mental health professionals is to avoid these crisis highest negative outcomes, right? So mm-hmm. If I look at, I've treated so many clients, right, who I thought, if we don't get them treatment right now, whether it's a result of severely acute psychotic symptoms, voices that they're hearing to tell them to do just awful things, deep, deep states of depression, right? If we can identify these individuals and get them into crisis treatment, we can divert some of these really serious situations. And it's hard as mental health professionals, right? Because we can't predict future behavior,
right?
We can't predict, but we can assess risk. And we can put interventions in place. And the whole goal of what we're trying to do here is to put interventions and increase those protective support systems so that we are going to decrease the risk level and prevent negative outcomes from happening. And so when I look at these situations, Transferall is a part of that whole piece, right? There's that clinical assessment, there's that understanding, but it's also, if we take action and we can quickly get somebody into the care they need and not have them fall through the gaps of services, mm-hmm. we are more likely to prevent some of these high fatality negative outcomes that could happen. So if you look at a student who is acutely psychotic or deeply depressed, if we're able to seamlessly get somebody into treatment rather than having a system that feels so hard to navigate, that we can look at prevention efforts from some of these more serious situations that happen, including suicides. You have suicide homicides, right? You have situations where people just don't get treatment, or you have kids who just don't get academic progress as well, because you can't learn very well if you're having psychotic symptoms or if you're having deep depression. And so I think there's a lot of ways that we look at side benefits of this is an access point to get into treatment. And I see that being beneficial in so many ways, especially when we look at the rates of people who are, especially youth, who are diagnosed with or have mental health symptoms who are not actively engaged in treatment. And that's the rate that I really think needs to go up. So that we have higher rates of intervention and supportive services being provided. When you look at being connected to telehealth, I mean, this is a drastic change, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm in a rural area and I have to travel 300 miles or 150 miles to get to the closest psychiatrist, I'm probably not going to go. I might not have the resources to get there, but if I can click on through a device in my living room now, I may now suddenly have this connection and treatment that I never had access to before. And that's profound for a lot of people. I think that's a profound change that we're seeing, and that we have the ability to reach so many more people. And we want to make this a streamlined process. Calling a list of 25 psychiatrists on your insurance list to try and find somebody to see you, and everybody saying that they're full or don't take patients, is miserable. And there's no person or parent who's, you know, struggling who should be put through that in order to get access to care.
Wow. Yeah. That, I mean, that whole thing about access in terms of it being yet another piece of proactive prevention in terms of preventing tragedies, in terms of preventing, you know, lost learning, which can become a tragedy, all of these things. And, you know, access to psychiatrists, my goodness, that is a thing. You know, I'm in New Jersey, and that is such a thing in New Jersey. You know, there's lots of psychiatrists in New Jersey, but they're all busy. How do you find that psychiatric care, which I am seeing, you know, with everyone else, an acute need for at this time? Shauna, I want to thank you so much. You did such a nice job of really explaining what Transferral does. It just, the potential for this just strikes me as limitless in terms of the impacts that it can have on quality, efficiency, provision, access to care. So I'm really excited about this. I'm sure that people listening are excited about this. They better be if they're not. So what I'm wondering is how do they find out more about you?
Sure. So anyone can go to our website at www.transferall.com, and we have a link to sign up for a demo, or you can reach out directly to our team, and we'll be more than happy to provide more information about how to access some Transferall for your school district or health system or crisis team. We definitely want to expand our reach and make this a resource that people can use to help individuals in their communities.
Fantastic. Shauna, thanks again for joining me today. I've really enjoyed learning more about Transferral and sharing this with our listeners.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Conversations about Student Mental Health is brought to you by Thrive Alliance Group, partners in school-based mental wellness. Before we wrap up, I want to let you know about an upcoming webinar that can help school professionals address classroom behavioral problems that are disrupting learning and leading to teacher burnout. We're seeing it across the country and at all educational levels. It seems as if students are regressing emotionally, socially, and behaviorally. Join us on Tuesday, March 1st for The Behavioral Earthquake in the Classroom, Causes and Management Strategies. To register, visit thrivealliancegroup.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.